It would be more accurate to say that I had accrued a substantial amount of vacation and leave time over the years. Ben glanced at a silent and distant Matt, then looked at Cassie, who was gazing at Matt's desk. The tension in her slight body was visible, even though her face remained expressionless. Ben had the feeling he was the only one in the room who didn't know what was going on. "Okay," he said, returning his gaze to the agent. "So how does that explain your presence here? Just happened to be in the area? Or is chasing after serial killers a hobby of yours?" "You might say that chasing after alleged psychics is a hobby of mine." "Alleged?" "That's right. There are so many charlatans, you know. So many so-called telepaths whose claims can't be scientifically documented."
"He means me."
Cassie looked up for the first time, her gaze fixing on Bishop. "I don't perform well in a laboratory setting." Her voice was cool. "That's one way of putting it," Bishop murmured. "The tests were poorly designed, and you know it. But it was my fault for even agreeing to be tested." Her shoulders lifted and fell. "I've stopped trying to prove myself to you, Bishop."
"Have you?"
Two pairs of gray eyes locked together, and Ben could almost feel the struggle of wills. Then Cassie looked at Matt and said, "I don't know what he's told you, but I can guess he had nothing good to say about me. Want to hear my side of the story?"
Matt nodded.
"Okay. A couple of years ago, Agent Bishop was called into a missing persons case in San Francisco. The missing woman's husband was quite wealthy and politically powerful, which was why the FBI was called in, even though there was no evidence of a kidnapping. Days went by, then weeks, but neither the police nor Bishop and his people could find a trace of the lady. Her sister, in the meantime, contacted me. She had heard of me through mutual acquaintances and believed I might be able to help find her sister. So I flew to San Francisco and went to the house where the missing woman had lived."
"And?" Matt prompted.
"And I knew she was dead." In a wry tone, she added, "The police were naturally suspicious when I made that claim, but when they started looking for a body, they found one. Just where the husband had dumped it."
"He hasn't gone to trial yet," Bishop said.
"You know and I know he killed her."
"Maybe."
Cassie glanced at the agent, then returned her gaze to Matt. "At any rate, Agent Bishop asked me to allow myself to be tested. I refused and went back to L.A.
"Why did you refuse?" Matt asked.
"Advice from my mother. It was her belief that until medical science learned a lot more about the brain, psychic ability would never be understood. What science cannot understand, it tends to try its best to disprove. The whole process leads to a great deal of tension and pressure, both of which interfere with psychic ability."
Bishop made a skeptical sound.
Cassie didn't rise to the bait. "Anyway, as I said, I went home. A couple of months later, I was asked to advise in a murder case. And Agent Bishop turned up, like a bad penny."
"I resent that," he murmured.
Cassie ignored him. "It was a difficult case, complicated even more by the fact that I had the flu and should have refused to get involved. That's no excuse, but it is part of the reason I failed."
"How did you fail?" Matt asked.
"Misinterpreted something I saw. What I told them led the police to concentrate on the wrong suspect, and the real killer had time to kill again. Which he did." She looked steadily at the sheriff. "It wasn't the first time something like that happened, and it won't be the last. No psychic is 100% right 100% of the time."
Again, Cassie gave a little shrug.
"There were a few more cases after that. Some I was able to help solve, and some I wasn't. Bishop kept turning up. kept asking me to allow myself to be tested. So I finally did. And I flunked all the tests. As I said, I don't perform well in a laboratory setting. I always did choke at exams. You graduated college, Bishop pointed out. Eventually, you had to pass those exams. Putting myself through that earned me a degree. Putting myself through your tests again would earn me absolutely nothing. Except scientific validity and recognition. And then what? Go on the talk shows? Find myself getting tons of mail from poor lost souls who think I might be able to help them? Sit in more laboratories while more scientists devise more tests to measure and weigh and define my abilities? Why? Despite what you think, Bishop, I don't want to be recognized. I don't want to be validated. And I sure as hell don't want to be famous. Then, he said softly, gesturing around them, why do this? Why involve yourself in police investigations? Because I can help. Not all the time, but sometimes. Because I was raised to believe it's my responsibility. And because I can't not involve myself. She drew a breath and added quietly, and I really couldn't care less whether or not my reasons satisfy you.
They satisfy me, Matt said, surprising everyone. And me, Ben agreed, tired of feeling invisible in the room.
Cassie glanced at him for the first time, something he couldn't read flickering in her eyes. Then she looked at Matt. In that case, I say we have more important things to talk about. Is there still no word on that poor girl?
No, nothing. Do you think you'd have any luck trying to connect with the killer again?
Before Ben could object, Cassie said, I've already tried a couple of times today and...
What? He stared at her. When? And without a lifeline? Damn it, Cassie.
She avoided his gaze once more. Not long after I woke up this morning and in the car coming here. There was no danger. It would have been a shallow contact, if I'd been able to get through. I wasn't able. He's keeping me out.
Convenient, Bishop murmured.
For someone who'd more or less been told to mind his own business, he didn't appear to be discouraged or disgruntled, merely calm and watchful. Matt glanced at him, then said to Cassie,
How about trying to reach the girl? I still have the gloves she left in her brother's car yesterday.
Cassie nodded without hesitation. I'll try. The sheriff jerked his head toward the agent.
Want him gone?
No, he can stay. She smiled faintly. One of the things that intrigues him about me. I do perform well outside laboratories.
Bishop made no comment.
Matt reached into his center desk drawer and drew out a plastic bag with a pair of delicate ladies' gloves inside. He pushed the bag across to Cassie.
I'm assuming you could reach her if she's still alive. What if she's already dead?
I may get nothing. Or I may know where she is.
She hadn't yet reached for the bag. How? Ben asked her. If there's no mind there to tap into, how do you know?
Cassie turned her head and looked at him with an odd little smile. I have no idea. Sometimes I just know. He watched as she reached for the bag, opened it, and drew out the pair of gloves. Head bent, she held them in her lap, fingers toying with them. Ben saw her eyes close. He waited a minute or so, then said,
Cassie, what do you see?
She didn't respond.
Cassie.
Poor thing.
Her voice was soft.
The sheriff muttered,
Shit.
Ben kept his voice steady.
Can you see her, Cassie? Where is she?
She's in a building. A barn. It hasn't been used for a long time, I think. There used to be pasture all around it, but now everything's overgrown. Cassie lifted her head and opened her eyes. She was pale, but calm. She slid the gloves back into the plastic bag and pushed it across the desk to the sheriff. "I can show you the way," she told him. Ben wanted to protest, but he knew it would be almost impossible for Cassie to pinpoint the location on any map. There were far too many abandoned barns, in far too many overgrown pastures in the area. Ben and Cassie went in his jeep, with the sheriff and bishop following in Matt's cruiser. Ben and Matt agreed that the fewer people who knew they were searching for a body, the better. At least until it was found. As they headed north out of town at Cassie's direction, Ben said, "I'm surprised Matt's letting Bishop tag along. In fact, I'm surprised he's giving him the time of day."
"If I know Bishop, he probably implied that the Bureau would be very interested in these murders, if they knew about them. The other newspapers in the state, too. Although, of course, if he's busy following the investigation, he won't have time to report in or call anybody."
"You seem to know him very well."
Cassie glanced at him. "I can't read him, if that's what you're asking."
"Even when you touch him?"
"I've never touched him."
Ben digested that. "So he has walls too, huh?"
"Big, thick ones." Cassie paused. "Turn up here to the left, beside that fence." He did so.
"What's he after, Cassie?"
"I don't know. If I had to guess, I'd say proof. On the other hand, I've always had the idea he's looking for something he really doesn't expect to find in a lab or on a score sheet."
"For instance?"
"I don't know. As I said, it's just an idea. Wait, slow down a bit. See that dirt road up ahead? Turn onto it."
From the gathering tension in her voice, Ben knew they were getting close, so he fell silent and concentrated on following her directions. Several miles and a few more turns later, he stopped the jeep on a fairly narrow dirt road. Cassie pointed, and he could see through the trees a ramshackle building that had probably once been a barn. Uncertainly, she said,
"I don't think the killer came from this direction, but..."
"In case he did, we'll stop here to avoid screwing up any tracks."
Matt's cruiser pulled in behind them, and the sheriff and FBI agent got out and approached the jeep, both on Ben's side.
"Is this it?" Matt asked.
Ben pointed and related what Cassie thought about the killer's approach.
"Okay. You two wait here."
"Matt?" Cassie leaned forward a bit so she could see him. "This time he arranged the body for maximum shock effect. Brace yourself."
He nodded. He and Bishop disappeared into the trees.
Ben looked at Cassie.
"Were you right about what he intended to do to her?"
Cassie drew a breath and let it out slowly. "Not entirely. He had a few more plans I didn't know about."
"What do you mean?"
She turned her head and looked at him with haunted eyes. "He cut her up, Ben. She's in pieces."
Chapter 16.
The news that the horribly mutilated body of 15-year-old Deanna Ramsey had been found spread through Ryan's Bluff like wildfire. By the time Cassie and Ben got back to the sheriff's department less than an hour after the body was found, a small crowd was already gathering. By the time the black van belonging to a local undertaker passed through town a few minutes later, escorted by a couple of deputies, the crowd had doubled. With the sheriff still at the crime scene, Ben went out to talk to them. Cassie remained inside and didn't hear what he said, but she watched from the window in Matt's office
and she wasn't surprised when the visibly agitated group calmed somewhat and eventually began to disperse. The man has a golden tongue. Cassie turned from the window to find a female deputy standing in the doorway. Her name tag read, Sharon Watkins. But how long will they listen to him? Cassie asked. Sharon smiled. They're listening today. That's really all we can hope for. She hesitated. We have some pretty good coffee out here if you'd like a cup. Cassie appreciated the offer, especially since she knew most of the deputies viewed her with uneasiness, if not outright suspicion. Thank you. I'll get the judge some, too. I figure he'll stay here at least until the sheriff gets back. I think that's the plan. Ben had already made numerous phone calls, in a concerted effort to keep the lid on the growing panic and anger of the town. He'll have to talk to the mayor again. Sharon sighed as she turned away. He's already called twice in the last 5 minutes. The man needs a hobby. Or a town where no killers lurked, Cassie thought. She hadn't met Mayor Roop, but from what she had heard, she got the feeling the first-term mayor had a great deal of charm and very little common sense, which was undoubtedly why he leaned heavily on the advice and help of other leaders of the town, particularly Ben and Matt. Cassie returned her gaze to the window to watch Ben speak to the few lingering members of the crowd, then went back to her seat on the leather sofa. She would have preferred to be home, but Ben had asked her to stay with him, and she had agreed, more because she hoped she might be of some help than because it was a comfortable or safe place to be. She knew he was worried about her, that he didn't want her alone in her isolated house, even with a protective dog and a good security system. Her most recent contact with the killer had unsettled him as much as it had her, she thought. He was also very obviously feeling decidedly edgy about Bishop. She couldn't help him there. The agent made her feel edgy herself, and always had. Cassie leaned her head back against the sofa and closed her eyes, then just as quickly opened them again. The trouble with closing her eyes was that she kept seeing the remains of that poor girl scattered all over that barn. Even with her experience of horrible sights and her hard-won ability to detach herself somewhat, this one was so brutal and dehumanizing that it was branded on her mind's eye in a way she would never entirely escape. But when her eyes were open, she could look consciously at something else. Anything else. The map behind Matt's desk made a good focus. Salem County, one of the larger counties in the state and shaped vaguely like a triangle. Cassie shook her head irritably. There was some damned song in her head, a tune she couldn't identify that kept playing over and over again, fading into silence, only to return. It was one of those maddening tricks of the mind that tended to come when there was too much to think about. Sharon returned with coffee and the offer of sending out for a late lunch, if and when it was wanted. Cassie thanked her, and the deputy returned to her desk a couple of minutes before Ben came back into Matt's office. Cassie indicated the cup Sharon had left for him, then said, "It looked pretty ugly out there for a while." Ben sat down behind Matt's desk. "It'll be a lot worse if we ever get a suspect in custody. That's as close as I ever want to come to facing a lynch mob."
"They listened to you. They left."
"This time," Ben said, unknowingly echoing Deputy Watkins. "But if we don't catch this bastard, and soon..."
"He's still blocking me."
"Damn it, Cassie, stop trying to contact him without a lifeline."
"I told you it isn't dangerous."
She shook her head, avoiding his gaze.
"And I have to keep trying. What else am I here for, Ben? So far, all I've been able to do is tell Matt where to look for the bodies. I've been a lot of help."
"You've done everything you could."
"Have I?" Cassie stared down at her coffee. "I'm not so sure."
"You seem very tense. What's bothering you?" he asked.
I don't know. Just a feeling. He waited, watching her. Slowly, Cassie said, he had to be in a frenzy this time, you know, to do what he did to that poor girl. Ben hadn't viewed the murder scene, but he had seen Matt's sickened face and Bishop's stony one, as well as Cassie's haunted eyes. He could only imagine the carnage that must have lain waiting for them in that barn. Don't think about it, he said. I don't have a choice. It isn't something I can put out of my mind. Eventually, maybe, but not yet. She shrugged jerkily. If I can just make sense of it.
How can any of this make sense?
Even madmen have their own mad logic. She looked at him, frowning. Maybe that's what's bothering me.
What?
Well, it's like he's blowing hot and cold. One victim is found far from where she was killed, the crime scene neat, her body virtually unmarked except for the wound that killed her, no murder weapon anywhere to be seen. The next is found in the room where she was killed, blood everywhere, the weapon a knife he found and left right there. Then he picks up another knife and takes it to use on his third victim, who's found where she was killed, but again, the scene is neat and calm. And now this. He made the weapon that killed her and took it with him after he was done with her. But killing her wasn't enough. Raping her wasn't enough. He had to cut her into pieces. Ben drew a breath.
It takes more than a kitchen knife to hack a body into pieces.
He used an axe, Cassie said, and left it at the scene. He took the garrote with him, but left the axe in that barn.
Ben didn't ask her how she knew that.
Instead, keeping his voice as composed as hers was, he said,
seemingly calm and controlled when he kills one victim, then frenzied when he kills the next, as if he needs those violent outbursts?
I don't know, but it bothers me. I'd say he was trying to disguise some of his kills, but leaving the coins at the scene is as good as a signature, and he has to know that. Matt had told them tonelessly that the killer had left his usual coin after killing Deanna Ramsey. It was a penny, placed on her forehead, between gouged-out eyes. Cassie rubbed her own forehead fretfully as she considered the mad logic of a madman, and Ben felt a little chill as he imagined a coin lying coldly against her skin. He didn't want to let her out of his sight. It wasn't just because the killer knew who she was now. It was also because Cassie seemed hell-bent on contacting the bastard again, and was far too willing to do so without a lifeline. At least, without him as her lifeline. He was afraid that was it. Cassie had withdrawn so completely from him, she wouldn't accept any kind of contact with him, even to save her life. If it could save her life. There's something I'm missing, she said almost to herself. Something, I just don't know what it is.
As much as I hate the very possibility, have you considered that there might be two killers?
Cassie nodded immediately. Sure, but I'm positive the same man killed these women, all of them. Ben knew that Matt had reached the same conclusion, thanks to what little forensic evidence they'd managed to gather added to the presence of the coins and the identical way in which the first three bodies had been found posed. And they'd found a bloody footprint at this latest scene that Matt was certain would match one of those found in Ivy Jameson's bloody kitchen. To Matt, the facts added up to one killer. I just wish I knew what was bothering me, Cassie murmured.
You're still tired, Ben said.
I slept more than 12 hours.
Maybe it wasn't enough.
Cassie's smile was slight and fleeting. It's never enough. I'm fine, Ben. I told you I wouldn't collapse, and I won't. I'm stronger than I seem. I know. You're worried about me. Don't be. Lightly, he said.
For somebody with walls, I don't hide some things too well.
Cassie said nothing, just stared at her coffee. Was he being too watchful? Too protective? Ben didn't know. It was the first time in his life he had found himself coping with an almost overpowering urge to shield a woman. He suspected he was neither hiding it nor handling it too well, especially given Cassie's prickly and independent nature. He had told himself that morning to back off and give her the time and room she obviously needed, but gazing at her now, he was very conscious of minutes ticking away. Something told him that even if backing off and giving her time was the smart thing to do, it wasn't the right thing to do, because time was something they simply didn't have. "We've never had a chance, have we?" he heard himself say. She looked at him, those eyes touching him as though with a warm hand, and the wariness he saw there hurt him. She didn't ask, but her brows rose in an almost indifferent question. "We've never had a chance to be ordinary. Just two people drawn to each other. We can't even seem to talk about ordinary things. All we talk about are killers." Cassie smiled just a little, sadly, and he wanted badly to go put his arms around her. "I tried to warn you," she said. "Cassie." She shook her head. "It doesn't matter." "It matters to me." "Catching a killer matters to you, Ben." Her voice was suddenly remote. "Making your town safe again matters to you. And maybe... maybe I matter to you."
"There's no maybe about it," he said roughly.
She accepted that without any visible reaction. "All right. But it's a question of priorities, isn't it? Nothing can be settled until this killer is caught. All your energy and all of mine has to focus on that."
"And afterward, when the killer is caught? What then, Cassie?"
"I don't know." There was something painfully honest in the apprehension in her gaze. "I don't know how you'll feel. I don't know how I'll feel. I don't even know if either of us will have the energy left to give a damn."
"This is not going to just go away, if that's what you think." "Is that what you think? That I want you because we're both involved in this investigation? That it's propinquity?"
"Stranger things have happened," she murmured. Ben shook his head.
"You're wrong. For one thing, I'm not in the habit of coming on to the nearest available woman. Cassie, why are you looking for excuses?"
"Excuses?"
"That's what it sounds like to me. One reason after another to hold me at arm's length until... what? Until I lose patience and give up?"
Cassie was spared having to answer that when the phone rang.
"Damn it," Ben muttered, as Cassie answered the phone.
"I think the mayor wants to talk to you," Cassie said. And both of them heard the relief in her voice. Hannah Payne hummed softly to herself as she pinned the pattern to materials spread out on the living room floor. She should have been in her sewing room, of course, the extra bedroom that Joe had fixed up for her. But he was napping in their bedroom right next door, since he had to go into work that night, and she didn't want to disturb him. From time to time, she felt a little chill of worry over that missing girl. But Joe had been right when he'd told her she would just upset herself if she listened to the radio all day, waiting to hear about the poor thing. There was nothing she could do to help, after all. Snug in her own safe little world, Hannah worked contentedly, disturbed only when the phone rang just after 2 o'clock. She lunged to grab the receiver before it could ring again and wake Joe. "Hello?"
Silence.
"Hello? Is anyone there?"
Soft music began to play.
Hannah began to be afraid, even though she couldn't have said why. It was a music box, she realized. Nothing else had quite the same tinkling sound. Just a music box. And someone was obviously playing a joke on her. "Hello? Who's there?" She didn't recognize the tune.
Bitch.
With a gasp, Hannah hung up the phone. She sat there on the floor, feeling very, very cold. Just a joke, of course. Somebody was being bad, being mean. That was all it was. That was all. Joe wasn't going to like it when she asked him to stay home from work another night. It was 3 o'clock that afternoon when Abby pulled her car to the curb in front of the sheriff's department, left Bryce inside, and came up the walkway to the steps. Cassie was sitting on the fourth one.
Hi,
Abby said. Cassie echoed the greeting, then added,
Matt isn't back yet.
He's still out there with
the Ramsey girl?
Where she was killed, yeah. They sent her body back to town about an hour ago, but the crime scene unit is still out there collecting evidence, or what they hope will be evidence.
That FBI agent still around?
Cassie wasn't surprised that the other woman knew. Out there with Matt and the rest. Word has it he's from one of those serial killer task forces the FBI sends around the country.
He isn't.
Though I believe he spent some time in behavioral sciences at Quantico. Abby eyed her.
And why is he here?
Nobody believes Matt called the Bureau. Least of all me.
He didn't.
Cassie smiled and briefly explained her history with the agent, finishing with,
He'll stick around, watching and listening and offering unsolicited advice.
Probably drive Matt nuts, even though he really is pretty good at figuring out murders. But I guess you could say he's here for me, if for anything.
I see.
And what does Ben say about that?
Not much so far.
Cassie jerked a thumb over her shoulder. The mayor and 3 members of the town council are in there talking to him right now. I was just in the way, and the focus of intense curiosity. So I came out here for some fresh air. Abby sat on the step beside her.
Has Ben kept you hanging around here all day?
Well, I've suggested taking a cab home, and one of the deputies offered to drive me, but Ben needed to stay here until Matt gets back, and he asked me to stick around.
She shrugged.
Maybe I can help.
And maybe he just wants you with him.
Cassie turned her gaze out toward Main Street, absently focusing on a woman a couple of blocks down who seemed to be picking up litter from the sidewalk.
I don't know why he would.
We either spend our time discussing the finer points of lunatic killers and their methods, or else end up in a senseless debate neither of us can seem to win. One of us pushes, and one of us backs away. It's like some frustrating dance.
One of those, huh?
I've been there. He's a very stubborn man. Not as stubborn as your Matt, maybe, but
nobody is as stubborn as Matt.
There was a touch of amusement in Abby's voice. As for Ben, the word I'd use to describe him would probably be determined. Cassie sent her a glance.
Yeah? Definitely. As far as I can tell, nothing much has ever stood in his way when he wanted something.
I suppose that goes for women, too? Abby pursed her lips thoughtfully.
I imagine so.
Though, to be fair, he hasn't exactly cut a heartless swath through the county. He's usually had a girlfriend, but seems to prefer them one at a time, and they seem to stay friendly with him once it's over.
Figures.
Cassie sounded disgruntled. Abby hid a grin.
Well, he's a nice guy.
I know. I know he is. Cassie sighed and watched her breath turn to drifting mist. It had warmed up during the afternoon, and the skies had cleared somewhat, so sitting on the front steps of the sheriff's department was actually rather pleasant. But it was still a winter day, and there was still a chill in the air.
And not at all bad-looking,
Abby went on, warming to her theme.
Of course, some women don't care for dark men, and I suppose it could be argued that since he's still single at... Let's see, he's Matt's age, so he must be about 36 or 37. Then he probably has a few intimacy issues lying about. But maybe I've seen too many talk shows. Cassie smiled, continuing to watch the woman moving slowly toward them along the sidewalk, bending from time to time to pick up something from the pavement. Intimacy issues, huh?
Yeah. Well, he isn't the only one.
You can tell me it's none of my business if you like. But which one of you is backing away?
Me, at the moment.
Ah. You don't like dark men?
Cassie kept it light.
It's lawyers. I mean, I know he's been a judge, and now he's a prosecutor. But all those lawyer jokes just get to you after a while.
And he's a politician, too. Abby noted sympathetically.
Worse and worse.
I suppose you could try reforming him.
Oh, no. Any woman who tries to reform a man deserves everything she gets.
Abby laughed.
Cassie smiled, then said, Abby, who is that woman? The one coming toward us?
Abby looked.
Oh, that's Lucy Shaw, poor thing.
What is she picking up?
I thought it was litter, but nobody knows what she thinks she's picking up. Whenever she manages to escape her son's watchful eye, she ends up roaming the streets picking up invisible things until he comes looking for her.
Remembering, Cassie said,
Oh, yes. Ben told me about her. And nobody knows what did this to her.
Not that I've ever heard. I just assumed it was Alzheimer's. Even though she couldn't have been much past 40 when I first noticed her roaming the streets.
She looks about 70 now, Cassie murmured.
I know, but she's younger. When she was a young woman, she was famous for her needlework. Apparently she still does some in lucid moments, because her son usually sells a few pieces at the church bazaar every year.
Abby paused, then added, I should go call him now. She never seems to wander into traffic or get hurt in any way, but she isn't dressed warmly enough to be out here.
Lucy Shaw was wearing faded jeans neatly rolled up above her ankles and a cotton cardigan over a T-shirt. Untied and ancient Reeboks flapped on her sockless feet. Her mostly gray hair was untidy, but not witchy, and she was almost painfully thin. She turned up the walkway that led to the sheriff's department. She had been moving steadily and straight down the street, but now she moved much quicker, bending only once to pick up whatever her mind told her was so important. She held one hand cupped close to her body, as though holding small items, and her other hand curved around it protectively. She stopped near the foot of the steps, straightened, and stared at them with vacant eyes. Gently, Abby said,
Miss Lucy, you shouldn't be out on such a cold day.
Those faded blue eyes sharpened, stared at her for a moment, then shifted to Cassie.
They're all over.
Her voice was paper thin and whispery.
Scattered all over. I have to pick them up.
Of course you do, Cassie said quietly.
You understand?
Yes.
Yes, of course. It wasn't my fault. I swear, it wasn't my fault.
No one blames you, Abby soothed.
You don't know.
The faded eyes returned to Cassie's face.
But you do. You know the truth, don't you? You can see the face he hides from everybody else. His true face.
Cassie and Abby exchanged glances, and then Cassie said, The face who hides, Miss Lucy? Who are you talking about?
Him.
She leaned toward them and whispered fearfully,
He's the devil.
Miss Lucy, Abby began. Lucy Shaw reached out suddenly, one hand gripping Cassie's knee with unexpected strength.
Stop him,
she hissed.
You have to.
Cassie caught her breath and stared into the old woman's eyes. Then, as abruptly as it had begun, Lucy Shaw's moment of lucidity was over. Her eyes seemed to film over, and her hand fell away from Cassie. She stepped back, her hands cupped protectively once again near her middle, and said fretfully,
I have to pick them up. All of them. I have to.
Quick footsteps thudded up the walkway, and a thin man of about 45 who bore an unmistakable resemblance to Lucy Shaw caught her arm. Mama. Come along home, Mama.
I have to pick them up,
Lucy told him anxiously. Yes. We'll pick them up at home, Mama. Abby said, I was about to call you, Russell. She didn't mean to bother you. His voice was a bit rough, his tone defensive. We know that, Russell. We were just worried about her. Thanks, he said, but he was scowling. His eyes shifted away from Cassie, and his grip tightened on his mother's arm. Come along now, he said, gently enough.
They're scattered all over,
she murmured sadly. Yes, Mama, I know. The two reached the end of the walkway and turned back the way Lucy had come. When they reached the corner, they turned and vanished. Where do they live? Cassie asked. Two streets back from Maine. Close enough. Abby looked at Cassie curiously. You went white when she touched you. Could you see anything? Cassie didn't reply for a moment, and when she did, her voice was abstracted. Have you ever tried to see something in the face of a shattered mirror? Is that what a broken mind looks like to you? A shattered mirror? Hers does. Did you see anything in it? No. Nothing clearly enough to identify, except... Cassie looked at Abby, frowning. Except kittens.
Kittens?
Yeah. Kittens. Abby had intended to tell Matt about the phone call she had received, but she was reluctant to hang around the sheriff's department waiting for him. When he still hadn't returned by 4 o'clock, when the clouds began rolling in and the chill in the air deepened, she decided enough was enough. I'll tell him you were here, Cassie said. Then eyed her in sudden realization. Why were you here? I mean... considering how careful you two usually are to avoid attention. No reason. Uh-uh. What is it, Abby? I got a call. Just some nut breathing heavily into the phone, that's all. And whispering her name. It was probably just Gary playing games. Look, I don't want to worry Matt. I just wanted to see him. I'll tell him about the call, Cassie said. Abby, this is no time to hold back when something spooky happens. Even if it is just your ex tormenting you, Matt needs to know. In the meantime, you keep Bryce with you. It was good advice, and Abby took it. She drove back home, not quite as restless or uneasy as she had been earlier, but not entirely calm either. She wanted to see Matt. And she was reasonably sure she would see him that night. She knew him, and knew he would come as soon as possible after Cassie told him about the call. Besides which, they hadn't seen each other since those tense few minutes at the mall the previous day, and Matt seldom let two nights pass without them being together. He would be upset after the day he'd had, and he would be tired and hungry. Abby raided her freezer for the ingredients for a stew, and within an hour had it bubbling on the stove. When the phone rang, she didn't hesitate to pick it up.
She never got the chance to say hello.
You bitch, Gary snarled. Did you think I wouldn't find out about him?
Chapter 17. Cassie came downstairs and announced as she entered the living room, I've made up the bed in that other front bedroom. Standing by the fireplace, Ben scowled.
You shouldn't have bothered. I told you the sofa in here would be fine.
If you insist on staying here, that's a perfectly good guest room, and you'll use it. You can't have gotten any rest at all on that sofa last night. It isn't comfortable for sleeping, and it's inches too short for you. Ben considered telling her that since he had been unable to sleep anyway, and had gone to check on her an average of once an hour all night, the comfort of the sofa had not been an issue. But she had been distant and distracted since they returned to her house, and he was wary of saying the wrong thing. Finally, he quietly said, "Thank you." They had brought Chinese takeout food with them from town when Matt's return to the station around 6 had allowed Ben to leave, and he still hadn't gotten over the fact that Cassie hadn't argued when he stated his intention of spending the night. Cassie had merely nodded acceptance. She even went with him to his apartment, looking around curiously while he repacked his overnight bag. He had no idea what she'd thought or felt about his place. She'd made no comment. Now, with the remains of their meal cleared away, and sleet rattling against the dark window panes as a long evening stretched ahead of them, he was as uncertain of her mood as he had been all day. The only thing he was reasonably sure of was that she was far away from him. She curled up in the armchair she seemed to favor, glanced toward Max lying in his accustomed spot and working on the nightly rawhide bone, and said idly to Ben, I don't know how you usually spend your Saturday nights, but there are a lot of good books here, and movies on tape. There's even a stack of jigsaw puzzles in that front closet. All pretty tame, I guess. Ben put another log on the fire, then sat down on the sofa a couple of feet away from her and gazed at her steadily.
I'd rather just talk. Unless you're too tired.
Talk about what?
You.
She smiled. You know all about me. You had your secretary research me, remember?
Tell me what she didn't find out, he invited, refusing to be discouraged.
There's nothing to tell. Cassie looked back at the fireplace. Ben tried to keep it casual.
I don't even know what your major was in college, or how you supported yourself in the years since.
Double major, psychology and English lit. I had some income from Mother's estate, I told you that. It was enough to live on. She was matter-of-fact, almost indifferent. To supplement that, I read scripts. Easy work that let me stay home and avoid people.
Except when you helped the police.
Except then. A slight frown disturbed her face. I was never career-minded. I just wanted to be left alone.
And now?
And now I have this. She gestured at the room around them. Thanks to Aunt Alex. And she left me lots of books and tapes and craft kits to occupy my time. If I'm very lucky, when this killer is caught, there won't be another murder in these parts for years and years.
So you'll be left in peace.
Is that too much to ask?
What about a family, Cassie? What about that psychic daughter you could have one day?
No. No family. No daughter. Pass this curse on? Her smile was twisted, more with regret than with conviction, Ben thought. I don't think so.
Maybe she wouldn't consider it a curse.
Cassie shrugged. Maybe. And maybe the world would be different. Maybe people wouldn't be driven to hurt each other. Maybe a cure would be found for insanity, and there'd be no more monsters cutting up teenagers. And maybe the sun would rise in the west.
You said you couldn't see the future.
I can't. Then how can you be so cynical about it?
Experience with the past?
Ben went back to the fireplace to replace a log that had fallen out onto the hearth. But he remained there, gazing down into the flames. Cassie didn't have to be psychic to read his thoughts.
I know, she said softly. I'm such a downer. It's hard to be an optimist when you live your life with monsters.
Trying to scare me off? Ben asked, without taking his eyes from the fire.
Just telling it like it is.
Cassie leaned her head back against the chair and watched him. There was a dull ache deep inside her, as if her very bones hurt, and staring at him did nothing to ease the pain.
He'll destroy you.
Would he?
And would she care very much if he did?
Cassie knew she was a fatalist. She had good reason to be. For all her efforts over the years, all the horrendous, exhausting hours spent stealing into the minds of madmen and watching through their eyes acts of unbelievable evil, nothing much had changed. Evil killed. Innocence died. And she told the police where to find the bodies. So yes, she understood fate. She believed in fate. She had discovered the futility of trying to fight fate. Cassie? She wondered what her own expression was like to make his so disturbed. And she wondered why she was even struggling against something that had to be.
Telling it like it is,
she repeated slowly. Ben came to sit down on the coffee table directly in front of her, leaning forward so that almost no space separated them. And even that vanished when he reached out to put a hand on her knee. Cassie, I don't have to be a psychic to see that you're in pain. What is it? Is it me? Am I causing this? For a fleeting instant, Cassie remembered another hand clutching her desperately. But the image faded as she looked into Ben's hazel eyes and felt the warmth of his hand even through the heavy denim of her jeans. His hands were always so warm. So warm. Of course it's you, she murmured, smiling.
I don't want to hurt you, he said, not reassured by the smile.
Then kiss me.
Ben got to his feet, caught her hands, and pulled her up.
It's not that I want to refuse,
he said in the tone of a man who wanted to be completely understood.
But what just happened here? Because I could have sworn you thought this was a bad idea.
A woman's allowed to change her mind. It says so in the rule book.
Ah.
Ben's arms went around her, and he was smiling, but his eyes were grave.
So now you think this is a good idea?
Cassie wasn't about to lie to him.
I think I never really had a choice.
She looked at her hands resting on his chest, felt the warmth and strength of him, and let her body lean into his because it needed to.
Cassie.
I trust you, she said, because it was true. And I need you.
She needed his warmth, his caring. Most of all, she needed to know, just once in her life, what it felt like to be a woman a man desired. She reached up, her fingers touching his mouth, her gaze searching his face intently.
I need you, Ben.
Ben had the uneasy idea that he was seeing Cassie's fatalism at work once more, but it would have taken a stronger man than he was to draw away from her because of that. He had wanted her since the day she had first walked into his office, wary and withdrawn and tormented, her haunted eyes tugging at something deep inside him. And even if she had doubts, he had none. Not about this. His head bent and his mouth covered hers hungrily. There was nothing gentle in the kiss, nothing hesitant, and Cassie responded instantly,
rising on her toes to fit herself more intimately against him, her mouth opening eagerly beneath his. She felt so fragile in his arms, yet there was a steely strength as well, and unquestionably the desire of a woman. It was an enormously seductive combination. Entirely willing to be seduced, Ben nevertheless managed to ask hoarsely, "Are you sure?" There was a restless urgency in her voice when she answered, "I've never been so sure about anything in my life." It was more than enough. Ben kissed her again, then lifted her into his arms and carried her upstairs.
"To be honest, I was almost relieved," Abby told Matt, sincere but also trying to keep him calm. "The fact that Gary called instead of storming over here, I take as a good sign."
"How the hell do you figure that?"
Matt had finally stopped pacing the kitchen and swearing under his breath, but it was clear he wanted nothing better than to break something Gary-shaped with his bare hands. "I think if he'd found out I was seeing anybody but you, he would have come after me. But you give him pause. You're bigger than he is, younger, in much better shape, and you wear a gun. I don't think he wants to take you on, Matt."
Matt pulled her into his arms and held her tightly. "That doesn't mean he won't try something a lot nastier than phone calls when he's sure I won't be around. God damn it, Abby, this time I won't take no for an answer. Either I stay here, or you move in with me."
She couldn't help but laugh, albeit shakily. "You won't get no for an answer. Now that Gary knows, I don't care who else finds out."
"Good."
He kissed her,
taking his time about it.
When she could speak a few words coherently, Abby said, "You must be tired. Aren't you tired?"
"Not that tired."
He nuzzled his face against her neck, inhaling her scent because he loved it, then forced himself to raise his head.
"But I am starving. Until I smelled that stew, I hadn't realized how long it's been since breakfast."
"Breakfast? Honestly, Matt?" She eased from his embrace and got busy putting supper on the table. Neither of them brought up the reason his appetite had been gone for the entire day. It wasn't until the meal was finished and the dishes cleared away that Abby brought up the subject. "You don't have to go back to the office tonight, do you?"
"No. There's nothing I can do there."
His tone was bleak. Cassie said the killer wouldn't leave enough evidence to make himself identifiable. Was she right about that?
"So far."
Despite his earlier words, he looked very tired.
"If we can ever get a viable suspect, we might have enough to nail his ass. He didn't wear a condom when he raped the Ramsey girl."
Abby tried hard to match his seeming detachment. "So he might be a... what do you call it? A secretor?"
"Maybe. But even if he isn't, with all the advances in DNA testing, we should be able to get just about everything except his name and address from the semen." He added, "Not that DNA evidence always convinces a jury, as we well know, but I'm counting on Ben to make damn sure this one doesn't slip through our fingers if we make it that far."
"If?" Matt sighed heavily.
"We might never catch him, Abby. I haven't wanted to admit it even to myself. But the simple truth is that serial killers tend to get caught only if they screw up. And they seldom screw up."
"But this is such a small town. A town where everyone knows his neighbor. How can a monster hide here?"
"In plain sight. Going about his business just like the rest of us. And probably with a smile on his face."
Matt shook his head.
"He won't have two heads or a forked tail, or anything else to warn the world he's an evil bastard."
Abby was silent for a minute and then said, "Was that FBI agent any help?"
"Some."
He knows a bit about serial killers, more than a bit about murder investigations. I figured he'd just get in my way, but so far he hasn't tried to take over the case. Not really surprising, I guess, since his main interest is Cassie.
That's what she said. But what is he doing, Matt? I mean, does he want to find some kind of evidence that she's genuine? Or that she isn't?
According to Bishop, he's just observing. I can't make out whether he believes in her or not. He says his interest in Cassie goes back a few years, that investigations she gets involved in tend to be... I think the phrase he used was unusually interesting. So he keeps an eye on her in his free time. I did point out that Cassie would most probably have a solid case for harassment if she decided to protest his observing, but he didn't seem too worried.
How about Cassie?
Tense when he's around, but not especially upset, far as I can see.
Abby hesitated. Do you think that maybe it isn't Cassie's psychic abilities Bishop is interested in?
Matt sipped his coffee. I wouldn't be surprised if Ben's afraid it's something like that.
But what do you think?
Bishop doesn't give away much, so I couldn't say what his feelings are. As for Cassie, Ben's the one she watches when he isn't watching her.
I like her, Abby said.
Matt looked at her with brooding eyes. Yeah, so do I.
But? He shook his head.
No buts. It's just that I'm wondering what all this is doing to her. To them.
Can't be easy for either of them.
No. And even without this situation, I'd say both of them have a few problems to work through.
Abby lifted an eyebrow. Cassie's problems, I can guess. But Ben? He's always seemed very centered, very balanced and emotionally stable.
He has, hasn't he? Matt shook his head. We all have problems. Ben has his. But in one way, Cassie may turn out to be the best thing that's ever happened to him. Thanks to her, I think he's finally beginning to figure out the difference between being needed by a woman and having a needy woman hung around his neck.
You mean Mary?
I do. Granted, the old judge was a cold fish, but if Mary had been more mature, she wouldn't have clung to Ben all these years trying to get the emotional security she needed. With her hung around his neck, especially since the old judge died, it's no wonder the last thing he wanted from any other woman was even the hint she might need more from him than he was willing to give.
Makes sense, I guess. And you think Cassie is asking for something that he is willing to give?
Slowly, Matt said, I think Cassie is asking absolutely nothing of Ben, despite the fact that it's painfully obvious how alone she is in her life. And maybe that's it. Maybe for once, Ben's the one who needs more than he's being offered.
From what she told me, I gather Cassie is trying not to get involved with him.
Oh, hell, they're already involved. He's over there tonight, just like he was last night, and will be tomorrow night, watching over her.
Ben's never struck me as especially protective of the ladies he was interested in.
You noticed that, huh?
Abby smiled. Does he know yet?
I don't think so. And I'd bet a year's pay that Cassie isn't sure whether he feels responsible for her or is just trying to get into her panties. Abby had to laugh.
Matt smiled in response, but then sobered.
I think that lady has seen too many monsters up close and personal. And even though yours truly is an open book to her, she says she can't read Ben. And I'm guessing that'll just make it harder for her to let him get close.
And the longer this killer stays on the loose,
the worse it'll be for both of them. Right now, as tenuous and fragile as it is, Cassie's connection to the killer is our best lead.
Matt paused.
And the killer knows it. He wound the music box carefully and let it play, smiling as the two dancers twirled and bobbed around each other in their eternal circle. He was tired and needed to sleep, because there would be so much to do tomorrow. But not just yet. First, he had to open his treasure box and look at each and every item, just as he always did before bed. Becky Smith's necklace. Ivy Jameson's peacock pin. Jill Kirkwood's lace-trimmed handkerchief. That was somewhat crumpled, since he had come into it a few nights before. But the sticky evidence of his devotion only made his smile widen. He held his most recent trophy in his hands and studied it in the lamplight. Deanna Ramsey's panties. He liked the silky feel of them in his fingers. He liked the pretty blue and green flowers printed on the material. He liked the way they smelled. He held the panties to his nose for a few minutes, eyes closed, breathing in, then put them tenderly into his treasure box with the other items. He closed the box, then carried it to the dresser and placed it alongside the square of black velvet that occupied the center space beneath the mirror. There were only two coins left, the dime and the 50-cent piece. He frowned down at them for a moment, trying to remember why they were so important. Oh, yes. Tokens of his affection. He had to leave tokens of his affection with the ladies. That was important. He mustn't forget how important. Two more, then. He had already selected them, and he knew what he would do to them. It was going to be so much fun. The only question was, which one would be first? Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Catch a lady by the toe. If she hollers, don't let her go. He lifted his eyes and gazed into the mirror, sad, but unsurprised when nobody looked back. Cassie woke with a start, but had no idea what had jarred her from a blissful sleep. Then, even as Ben rose on an elbow beside her, she remembered. Hey. He touched her face with gentle fingers. Are you all right? His hands were always so warm. She loved that. She wanted to purr like a cat whenever he touched her. She thought she should probably be embarrassed by that. I'm fine, she said at last.
You cried out in your sleep.
Cassie studied his face in the lamplight, memorizing it with an intensity she was hardly aware of. Just a bad dream, I guess.
You don't remember?
Not really. There was something about a mirror, and I couldn't get away from the music. She frowned suddenly. Still can't.
What music?
There's been a tune in my head on and off all day. It's vaguely familiar, but I can't remember what it is.
Maybe I'd recognize it.
Cassie smiled at him. Trust me. You don't want me to try humming. I'm tone deaf.
Really?
He relaxed beside her, his head propped up on one hand, while the other rested lightly on her stomach.
That's hard to believe. You have such a musical voice.
Must be genetics, then. I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket with a lid on it. Cassie couldn't remember him pulling the covers up over them, but she was glad he had. She wasn't exactly embarrassed, but she did feel a bit self-conscious lying there next to him, naked. A bit. God. It was the most astonishing thing. Passion. No wonder so much was written about it. For the first time in her life, Cassie now understood how people could claim that passion had made them mindless.
Cassie?
She blinked up at him.
You went away. Where did you go?
Cassie wondered if her eyes had crossed. Even the memory of passion was astonishing. She cleared her throat.
Nowhere in particular.
What time is it?
He glanced past her toward the nightstand.
Just after 11.
I should take Max out.
I'll do that. Later.
Ben leaned down and kissed her slowly and thoroughly. By the time he lifted his head, Cassie's arms were up around his neck, and she was reasonably sure she was purring. Where'd the damned covers come from? She wanted them gone.
Ben seemed to have the same idea. He pushed the blankets and sheet down until they rode somewhere around his hips, leaving Cassie bare much lower down. His eyes were on her small, pale breasts, and then his hand was touching them. Cassie heard a muted sound escape her and was helpless to stop it. The most casual of touches was something she was acutely aware of. The stark intimacy of his hands on her naked body was something she could feel all the way to her soul. She wasn't aware that her eyes had closed, that her nails bit into the hard muscles of his shoulders. The bed was gone, the room, the house, the world. All she knew was his warm hand stroking her flesh, creating pleasure she had never even imagined herself capable of feeling. Her breasts were hot and aching, her belly empty, and when his hand slid down between her legs, she thought she would die. He caressed her with certain knowledge, building her desire higher and higher until she could barely endure the sharp, winding tension. She wanted to plead with him to stop torturing her, but all that emerged was a wordless whimper. Then she felt him between her thighs, felt the slow, inexorable push of his hard flesh inside her body, and the soft sound she made was triumph and need.
"Open your eyes, love," he murmured. "Look at me."
His face was taut, eyes darkened and absorbed as they locked with hers, and Cassie was astonished all over again. She couldn't read his mind, yet somehow saw deeper, and that incredibly intimate communication made her pleasure spiral even higher as their bodies moved together.
"Ben," she whispered, obeying the compulsion to say his name, hearing the panic in her voice.
"I'm here."
His lips touched hers, toyed with hers, his forearms beneath her shoulders, fingers tangled in her hair. Those gleaming, darkened eyes were heavy-lidded, fixed on hers. His hips moved in a quickening rhythm. The tension inside Cassie became unendurable, yet she had no choice but to endure it. Her senses were spinning out of control, her body caught up in a desperate, headlong rush toward completion, and she clung to Ben as the only anchor left to her in an ocean of impossible sensation. When release finally came, it swept over her with the force of a tidal wave, the pleasure stealing her breath and almost stopping her heart, and it left Cassie dazed and shaken. She barely had the strength to hold Ben as he shuddered and groaned with his own climax, and all she could think of was how close she had come to never knowing this. It was a long time before either of them could move, and then it was Ben who eased his weight onto his elbows and looked down at her with eyes that were still dark and intent. Beyond any ability to be coy, Cassie said, "Wow." A glitter of amusement lit his eyes.
"I would say thank you, but it was definitely a mutual effort."
His voice was husky. "Is it always like that?" The first time had been astonishing enough. Cassie wasn't sure she could survive if it just kept on getting more powerful.
"It never has been before," Ben said, and kissed her lazily.
Cassie tightened her legs when he would have lifted himself away. "Don't go."
"I'm too heavy, love."
"No, you aren't." She wondered if he was even conscious of the endearment.
"Are you sure?"
"Positive."
She wanted to feel as much of him against her as possible, for as long as possible. Ben was more than willing to stay where he was, for a little while at least. He kissed her again because he had to, and kept his fingers threaded through her silky hair, as if, he vaguely realized, he expected her to try to escape him. He thought she probably would. Even then, with her body cradling his in the sated aftermath of the most incredible lovemaking he had ever experienced, there was something in her eyes that told him she was drifting away from him again, retreating in some way he could see and feel, but not quite define. He wanted to grab and hold on tight, but every instinct warned him that to do so would only push her away from him even faster and farther. The realization made something hurt inside his chest. "You're frowning," she murmured, fingers gently smoothing his forehead. "Am I?" He turned his head to kiss the inside of her wrist, where it was warm and soft. "Is something wrong, Ben?" He kept it light. "I think we should get a pet door installed for Max, because I really don't want you." She smiled, but before she could reply, they both heard a soft sound from the door.